The Defense Advanced Projects Research Agency, better known as DARPA, is famous for lighting the fire beneath once-in-a-lifetime innovations like network computing and GPS, and it's known for making investments with a huge potential payoff and also sometimes a huge amount of technology risk. Its director, Arthi Prabhakar, says that's not about to change, but inside DARPA, there's a new emphasis on innovating based on the fruits of its past labors rather than inventing from the ground up. For example, DARPA's investments in the miniaturization of microelectronics for military purposes form the foundation for what she calls a commercial juggernaut that's pushed that particular ball forward tremendously and advanced those circuits to the point where they're now ubiquitous in consumer electronics around the planet.
Now it's a huge opportunity for DOD, again, to take advantage of that. How do we surf on top of that and take all that power, but then repurpose it so that we get all of that capability and the ability to move fast and be agile as technology keeps changing.
In an interview with Federal News Radio, Prabhakar offered a DARPA program called ADAPT as an example. Its goal is to quickly and cheaply build new sensor systems for the military, with a recognition that past endeavors in that space by DOD have taken an average of 3 to 8 years, while commercial industry usually gets it right in 1 or 2. At its foundation is the commercial Snapdragon processor used in modern smartphones.
Essentially, that program recognized that the same things that go in your smartphone are the same things we need to build a huge number of the, you know, sensor networks or communication systems that we need in DOD. You need high-speed processing. You need a bunch of sensors. You need to know what your orientation is. You need to know what your global position is. You need to be able to communicate. Well, you know, why don't we leverage all of that capability? So the ADAPT program has created a set of nodes that are built on this commercial technology but are a great backbone so that when you want to build a new kind of sensor network, something we need to do for national security all the time, you can go start with that huge amount of capability and very quickly design at the systems level something that solves the DOD problem we're after.
While DOD's science and technology enterprise will always be focused on creating breakthroughs, Prabhakar says that doesn't mean those breakthroughs will all take the form of new technology systems. The department is putting more energy toward using innovation to reduce the cost of everything it buys, she says.
I think for the high-tech national security community, this whole theme is something that is new, and I don't think any of us are very good at it, and it's a challenge that I really want to put out to all of us at DARPA and the community that we work with, simply because I think we are on a path where we're going to build PowerPoint in the future instead of building real systems if we don't use innovation to change cost. We have some examples in our portfolio, and ADAPT is one. A very different example might be in very fundamental ways rethinking the deep reasons for cost in an area like space, one of the most costly domain that we try to operate in.
Prabhakar is not alone in her desire to use the process of innovation to target the main cost drivers behind DoD systems. Making existing and near-future systems more affordable is one of the top priorities for the Defense Department's top science and technology official. Alan Schaefer is the Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research and Engineering.
I have to start to think about affordability. And that means I prioritize things like projects that will help me get and understand interoperability and interfaces so that I can interact more easily with allies and other nations.
Likewise, Schaefer tells Federal News Radio, DOD needs to direct its research attention to projects that can find ways to make more use of modeling and simulation in the design of new systems.
That's something you don't think about research and engineering doing. But in commercial world, they're starting to get into the place where you do use computers, CAD, CAM for design. We want to carry that one step further and develop a capability to do system trades on the fly so you understand if I do design X, how will that affect the performance? And then vary the parameters of whatever that particular factor is to very quickly optimize your system. The other thing by developing these types of modeling and tools is if the requirement changes, I don't have to go back to zero for design. I'm able to move much more quickly through. So those are areas that I can't afford not to invest in, because the department is looking at our community to help them operate more affordably in the future. You know, Norm Augustine has a law if we don't change the way we're buying our current platforms, by 2050, the entire Department of Defense budget will buy one airplane. I am responsible, my community, we are responsible for breaking that particular paradigm.
At the moment, the overseers of DoD's research, development, test, and evaluation accounts have a strong incentive of their own to try and stretch their dollars further. During the first year of sequestration, those pots of money and the military's procurement accounts shrunk disproportionately to other parts of the DoD budget as the department scrambled to pay short-term bills at the expense of longer-term investments. And according to an analysis by the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, the pullback in RDT&E funds has happened at an unusually fast clip compared to prior defense spending drawdowns. Todd Harrison is a senior fellow at CSBA.
We have already, in the 3 years of this drawdown, the RDT&E budget has already declined by 25%. That's as much or more than it has declined in all three previous cycles. So if historical trends were to hold true, we may be done cutting the RDT&E budget. It may have already declined as much as it's going to decline.
But the Pentagon's top acquisition official isn't exactly sanguine about the future of R&D spending inside the department. Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, says he's worried. He says the level of investment DoD's making in research right now is one precursor to the hollow force senior defense officials have been warning about for years.
Yeah, the hollow force for readiness is right now. The hollow force because you didn't do enough R&D and procurement is a few years down the road, but it's going to be there. There's a pipeline for the Department of Defense in terms of the things that we have to do to sustain the force. I'm particularly worried about research and development accounts and what we're doing to them or maybe forced to do to them. If you think about it, research and development is essentially a fixed cost for the department, or not to be. Research and development is essentially the account that governs how fast we can modernize. We have, you know, ships, tanks, planes, et cetera. And you want to keep those systems at a current state of technological superiority relative to any adversary, then you have to do the R&D to support all of those pieces of equipment at that rate. That is a fixed cost. It doesn't matter how many ships or how many tanks or how many planes you have. The R&D stays basically the same. The variable cost is the production rate. And you can change that. Production's a little bit different. Production depends on the size of the force that you have and how old you're willing to let your equipment get before you replace it. But I am worried about R&D because it tends to be, if you look historically at what happens in drawdowns, the thing that gets cut.
And if those R&D accounts are constrained at the level sequestration would require, Schaefer says the survivors of the cuts are more likely to be applied research programs, those that aim to solve a specific problem. Investments in basic research, efforts to advance the nation's fundamental understanding of science and how to apply it to the military, are more vulnerable. For example, he says the department will spend less money to fund university-based design teams and more money on prototyping potential systems.
It's not a space I want to be in, but it's kind of where we are. If you look at basic research, it's very hard to draw a thread from a particular basic research problem to a system. What I can tell you is the defense's basic research investment over history gave the nation the internet, gave the nation GPS, gave us low observable capability, military capabilities that have been unmatched for an incredibly long period of time. If I reduce the number of grants I'm putting out at universities by 10%, I increase the probability that someone else will get to those solutions faster. It's not a linear equation, but it's more the law of large numbers. If you presume that 10% of basic research projects end up going into a final product somewhere sometime. If I start 1,000 fewer projects, I reduce the amount of things that go into long-term capabilities.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.